So during this series we've been in the book of Acts, multiple times we've talked about the danger of being driven by our fears. The danger of being driven by our fears. You know, we all have fears and anxieties, right? Does anybody have fear or anxiety in their life? I've got too much of it. I could share some with you all if you'd like. I will say, I believe even the most brave and courageous person in the entire world still has fears. If you truly experience no fear, then I'm concerned you might be disconnected from some important parts of your brain and your body, because this is part of who we are as humans. Fear keeps us alive. Fear keeps us from doing stupid things that can get us hurt or even killed. However, fear can also stop us from doing the right thing sometimes. Have you ever had that experience where fear stopped you from doing the right thing? When we're driven by our fears, we often make bad choices, and we often fail to do the right thing. We've seen how fear has even led good and faithful people to forsake their faith and do harm to other people. You know, in Acts, we see this many times. Best example may be the story of Stephen. Stephen was killed not by, you know, the people you would think or the awful violent sinners, you know. Stephen was killed by religious folks. But these religious folks who killed him were afraid of the changing tide. They were afraid of new ideas. They were probably afraid of the vulnerability that they felt. And so they went against their faith. And they caused great harm to Stephen. You know, in the story of the early church, if you've read through Acts, you'll see this. There's a lot of conflict in Acts. And particularly, there's a lot of conflict between the early Christians and the Jewish folks. Now, I'll tell you that tragically, this conflict has been misunderstood and weaponized in such a way where Christians have demonized Jewish people and demonized the Jewish faith and tried to act as if there's some inherent conflict between the two. I believe this is sinful and goes against the way of Jesus. I want y'all to remember that the first Christians were all Jewish people, and they loved their faith. Jesus only intensified their commitment to the heart of Judaism, which is all about love and justice and compassion and peace. When we read stories about Paul and even Paul's letters and you see critiques of the Jews, remember that Paul was a Jew himself and he was critiquing his own people. And also remember, he's not critiquing all the Jewish people. He was critiquing the ones in particular and often the ones who had power and leadership. He's critiquing them for forsaking their faith and refusing to honor what God desires and really refusing to be people of love and goodness and justice. Paul was able to critique his Jewish roots because he loved his roots. He loved his tradition and he loved his people. James Baldwin famously said, "I love America more than any other country in the world, and exactly for this reason I insist on the right to criticize her perpetually." Paul was a similar type person, I believe, that he loved his roots, and so he was willing to criticize and speak up. I think we also need to remember that the Jews in the first century had a lot of reason to be afraid of the new Christian movement. The Jewish people were not very large in number. They were also living as an oppressed minority in the Roman Empire, in this culture that was not their own. The Roman Empire was like all empires, the meaning that they controlled and determined and influenced everything. Greco-Roman culture was everywhere, and it often looked very different from the way the Jews were practicing their life and faith. It was everywhere. Many Jews were very worried about losing their own culture, about losing their unique identity, about losing their faith, about losing their values. Also, the Roman Empire was built on an economic system that was extracting resources from their subjugated people to benefit kind of the elite who were living in these places of power. And the Jewish people were victims of that economy. They were living in a very precarious and a very dangerous situation. So this Christian movement comes in, and it's very new, and in many ways draws the attention of the culture. They were doing things that could have been viewed as shameful by the culture, and they were likely worried that this new movement would bring unnecessary attention and concern from their neighbors, and particularly from the Roman government, which they didn't want to have more beef with them because the Roman government had a lot of power and could be very brutal if they wanted to. The Jewish Christians likely worried that if Paul and others kept reaching out to Gentiles, it could further just water down their commitment and their way of life and their unique way of being in this world. They likely worried about the so-called slippery slope that we hear about a lot. You know, if we budge on dietary laws, if we budge on the Sabbath laws, if we budge on circumcision, then what is next, right? We could lose everything. It could all go away, and we lose all that we stand for. You know, the Jews who became Christian, you know, because the first Christians were almost all Jewish people, and they started loving Jesus. But they didn't stop being Jewish. They still loved their heritage. They loved their tradition. They would still go to the temple and the synagogue often. For many, this was their ethnic identity. It's not something they can, like, just walk away from, right? To be a Jewish person in the first century meant that you followed dietary laws, that you got circumcised, you followed Sabbath laws. And to budge on those for them could mean the loss of a way of life. They had real fears about real stuff, and they feared real life consequences. And so as Paul and these other folks were pushing further and further into new territory, reaching new people, establishing churches that probably looked very different from the first churches, establishing daily rhythms of life and practices of their faith that looked very different, many Jewish Christians became more and more anxious and fearful about the consequences of all of this new stuff. And remember, when people are afraid, they often struggle to do the right thing. When we are afraid, we often lie. We can manipulate. We can back down when we need to stand up, right? We can isolate. We can lash out. We can even hurt others. I wonder what else you all do when you're afraid. Cowardice, or being a coward, is really letting our fears lead us and making bad choices because we are afraid. And I'll tell you, I've been a coward too many times to count in my life. Courage, on the other hand, I believe is letting our values and our convictions lead us. It's making good, loving choices even though we are afraid. It's making good, loving choices even when it's really hard to make those choices. Courage is not when you make the right choice when it's easy. Courage really reveals itself when it's hard to make the right choice. And I have been courageous sometimes, and I'm proud of those moments when I've not let my fears lead me. And I've done the right thing even though I was terrified. Courage is honesty. It's being transparent. It's integrity. It's stepping up. Courage is taking ownership. It's reaching out. It is solidarity. It is compassion. It's including people. It's standing up for others. I wonder what else you all do when you are courageous. Paul finally arrived in Jerusalem. A couple of chapters back, we talked about how he set his face toward Jerusalem, just like Jesus, and he took the courageous step and went regardless of the predicted suffering. He literally had a prophet come to him, and he tied up his arms and stuff, and he said, in a dramatic way, said, Paul, this is what's going to happen to you when you go to Jerusalem. You're in trouble if you go there. And Paul went anyway. That's courageous. He believed that was the loving and right choice. Like we said earlier, there were some Jews, some of them who had even become Christians, who had some serious issues with Paul and his new message, especially his emphasis on reaching out to Gentiles and fully including them in the church. Jerusalem was like the most Jewish place in the world, and some of the people in Jerusalem had the most concern about what Paul was up to. the church in Jerusalem, you had churches in different areas, and the church in Jerusalem was where it started. It was it was mostly Jewish people, probably the most traditional in many ways, and they had a man named James who was their primary leader. And they were excited about what Paul was doing and the growth of the Christian faith, but it seems they had some fears about how they're going to make it all work, right? How to have both Jewish and Gentile Christians as a part of the same faith. Because you could think Greco-Roman culture and Jewish culture looked vastly different from each other, and they were expressing their faith in very different ways. How can they make this work? You know, often we talk about diversity as being this wonderful thing. And I love diversity. It's one of our values that we are a diverse family here at Embrace. Most churches will say they want to be diverse, right? But turns out being diverse is not as simple as just wanting it. Diversity brings challenges, and it always tends to bring a lot of fear and anxiety. And I've seen it play out in many ways right here in this own church, our own church, over the last 18 years of being here. I want to read our text for today, Acts 21, verses 17 through 26. And you'll notice just a little nerdy thing. It says, when we arrived at Jerusalem, it's using the first person plural. And so usually the author's just talking about people, like Paul did this, he did this, but now he's including himself in the story. So it's believed that perhaps Luke, the writer of this, was traveling with Paul and was going to Jerusalem with him. So Luke probably had some courage too, because he knew that they were getting into some stuff if they showed up in Jerusalem. So when we arrived at Jerusalem, the brothers and sisters received us warmly. The next day, Paul and the rest of us went to see James and all the other elders who were present. So these are the leaders of the Jerusalem church. Paul greeted them and reported in detail what God had done among the Gentiles through his ministry, telling them all the good things they're doing, reaching out to Gentiles. When they heard this, James and the other elders, they praised God. But then they said to Paul, you see, brother, how many thousands of Jews have believed, and all of them are zealous for the law. They have been informed that you teach all the Jews who live among the Gentiles to turn away from Moses, telling them not to circumcise their children or live according to our customs. What shall we do? They will certainly hear you have come. You're probably not going to be happy. So do what we tell you. There are four men with us who have made a vow. Take these men and join in their purification rites and pay their expenses so that they can have their head shaved. Then everyone will know that there is no truth in these reports about you, but you yourself are living in obedience to the law. As for the Gentile believers, we have written to them our decision that they should abstain from food sacrificed to idols, from blood, and from the meat of strangled animals, and from sexual immorality. And that goes all the way back to when Dustin and Logan preached at the Jerusalem Council, some stuff they agreed to. So the next day, Paul took the men and purified himself along with them. Then he went to the temple to give notice of the date when the days of purification would end and the offering would be made for each of them. So what happens in this story is fairly simple. Paul showed up to Jerusalem and he met with James and the leaders of the Jerusalem church. Keep in mind, it's mostly Jews who are part of that church. And he tells them, and excitedly probably, about all the Gentiles who had given their lives to Jesus. He said it's amazing how many Gentiles are giving their lives to Jesus. And Luke tells us that the leaders were excited and they praised God. But based on my reading of this, it seems their excitement was quickly overtaken by fear and anxiety. You can imagine them hearing Paul, all those Gentiles, you're reaching out into all these places. What's this going to mean for us? And for our church, is this going to change what the Christian faith looks like? They heard the exciting news, but immediately started to consider the consequences of more Gentiles in the church. And started to think, too, of the consequences of Paul actually being in Jerusalem. Because they had heard what people were saying about Paul. They knew Paul wasn't a popular person. It's like if I invite some people to preach at this church, I might know that they may not be received warmly because I hear what people say about these folks. You know, it's like, they're probably concerned about Paul being in Jerusalem. I get this, you know, because sometimes I struggle to celebrate good news. Sometimes I struggle to entertain a good idea because I quickly start to overanalyze and consider all the possible problems and potential downfalls. Christina and Rachel could tell you that, I'm sure. My wife certainly could. She'll share good news. I'm like, well, I don't know if that's going to work out. We got to consider all these other things here, you know, and I'm working on it. But sometimes I can allow my fear and anxiety to overtake my excitement. James and the other leaders quickly countered Paul's good news with their own report of the amount of Jews who were also giving their lives to Jesus. Paul, it's not just growing among the Gentiles, but also among the Jews as well. There's lots of Jews giving their lives to Jesus. And then they brought up a concern to Paul. Some people were spreading rumors about Paul, that he was telling Jewish Christians to abandon their faith traditions. So he's like, you give your life to Jesus, you better not follow the law of Moses anymore. You don't follow those customs anymore. And they're spreading these rumors that Paul was saying these kinds of things. And Paul wasn't saying these kinds of things. But here's the fear we talked about, right? These were real fears. They were afraid they would lose their traditions and customs and their people, and so they started spreading these rumors about Paul. And rumors like that will spread very quickly among a vulnerable and scared people. They're like, what? Paul's saying that? No, he better not be saying that, because we're not going to do that. That's not how we're practicing our faith. James and the other leaders had a solution. And I'll tell you, I see this as a performative solution. In my mind, it was a political solution in the worst term, a way we use the term political. Imagine this scenario, okay, a politician is running for office and her consultants come to her and say, hey, people are saying that you don't care about the factory workers in middle America. They're saying you're going to go shut down all the plants and you're going to send their jobs overseas. We know you aren't saying that, but here's a solution. We're going to have you go to a factory in Ohio, and you're going to give a speech. And everyone's going to see you there with the hard hat on and everything, and they're now going to believe that you care about these people in the factories. Now, we know this doesn't usually work all that well, right? Because it's merely performative. People can see through that kind of stuff, right? They can see it's not necessarily authentic. So the Jerusalem leaders told Paul to join four men as they were going through this purification rite where they had to shave their heads as part of their faith. And they asked Paul, they're like, hey, Paul, why don't you pay for the cost of the head shaving? It's kind of like, hey, people are saying you don't care about this cause. Give a donation to the ministry. Make it public so everybody knows about it. Then they'll know you care, right? Paul, why don't you pay for it? If these Jewish Christians hear you did this, then they'll know that you're not against their Jewish customs, right? Now, it didn't seem to work all that well. Because immediately after, Paul faces intense backlash and more lies, and he ends up getting arrested, and a mob forms and wants to kill him. It's a whole thing. But of course it didn't work, because it was just really a performance. And it didn't address the underlying issues of lies and gossip and rumors that were spreading among the church in Jerusalem. You know, I wonder if the leaders in the Jerusalem church, like James and the others, were afraid of the changing landscape, the new faces in the Jesus movement. I wonder if they were afraid of potential conflict among the Christians in their churches in the city. And so they let their fears lead them. And they asked Paul to do something that wasn't all that helpful, and actually ended up doing nothing to address the lies and the gossip that was being spread about him, that was causing this in the first place. And in my mind, when they repeated those rumors about Paul and his companions, they, in a way, kept them alive. Instead of dealing directly with the lies and confronting the people spreading them, they sought to appease this group of people by having Paul do something that wasn't really genuine or driven by any love or solidarity. Now, I've had, in the past, situations that arise where someone comes to me from another church in town, and they start talking bad about another pastor in town. Surprise, I don't know if it surprised you. It happens quite a bit, actually. People jump around. They talk bad about where they come from. And sometimes people say things to me that clearly are not true. Like, I know for a fact they are not true, and it's just dishonest gossip and slander. Have you ever had this where someone tells you something? Like, I know this is not true. You're just spreading lies right now. Now, imagine if I go to that pastor and I say, hey, you know, such and such is saying this thing about you. I know it's not true, but I just thought you need to know. You might want to do something at your church to show your church that you're not that way, you know, so they'll stop saying these things about you. I imagine that pastor might say to me, John, did you tell them what they were saying wasn't true? Did you ask them to stop talking about me and come talk directly to me about these issues? Did you stand up for me in that situation? It certainly would get awkward when you have to say, no, I just listened. I should have said something, but it felt awkward, so I just let them go on and on about it. I wonder what a courageous choice for the Jerusalem leaders could have been. What if they had spoken boldly and publicly against the rumors that were spreading around about Paul? What if they had done that? James had a lot of influence. What if they had offered to join Paul in trying to address the rumors? Hey, Paul, let's go together and address this situation directly. What if they had decided, hey, we're going to travel with you, Paul, to everywhere you go in the city. We're going to give you some credibility and some safety. There would likely be great cost for them doing these things and a potential risk for James and the others. But courage often calls us to do things that are a little risky and do the right and loving thing even when we might be afraid. Justo Gonzalez, as I was reading him, he helped me see this part of the story that I wasn't seeing originally. And he said this, those leaders, instead of facing the evil rumors about Paul, bring their own gossip about those who are speaking about him. From this point on, the church in Jerusalem begins to disappear from the scene. But it may be the case at this point that the church begins to die. Gossip and rumor have a profoundly corrosive power in the life of the church. You know, one thing I've learned over the years is the destructive and unhealthy nature of triangulation or triangles, you know what I'm talking about, where it happens all too often. I've been engaged in it myself at times. Like, I have an issue with this person over here, this group, but instead of going to them and talking about it, I go over here and talk to this person about it, and then sometimes it'll get back to that other person that I was talking about them, and then it just creates this weird dynamic, or then someone comes to them and say, hey, you need to take care of this, or then they go and tell somebody else, and it just spreads and spreads and spreads, kind of like a contagious virus. Instead of spreading gossip and continuing to talk about others who aren't present, I'm learning, and I don't always get it right because I'm often afraid to do this, but trying to go directly to the people involved and talk directly to them and say, hey, what's going on? Let's deal with this. Let's work through this. It's scary, but I'll tell you, almost every time it works way better that way. And Jesus even teaches this. If you have a problem with someone, go to that person and talk to them about it. Sometimes if something serious is going on, which is dangerous or hurtful, and I've had to do this at times, when I need to go with that person and support that person who is being hurt or maligned or mistreated. Justo Gonzalez also writes, these believers in Jerusalem, while they tell Paul what he is to do in order to counteract the rumors, do not take a single step to join him in that task. Jesus was not content with giving us good advice, but rather becoming one of us and participated in our pain and in our strife. And Justo Gonzalez gives this interesting example of what this could look like. He's writing from the perspective of a Christian from Latin America, and he says, in a certain country in Latin America, there was a dictator who reigned. And they were in a movie theater, and they would always show this image of the dictator in the movie before you would watch it. And he says that this woman threw her shoe at the dictator's image because she did not like this person, and this dictator was mistreating lots of people. The lights were immediately turned on, and the officers, they announced that they're going to figure out who threw that shoe, and there will be consequences. They're going to punish them. And they said it'll be easy to figure it out because we'll see who's missing a shoe after the movie's over. However, after the movie, it says most of the women walked out barefoot because they were in solidarity with the woman who threw the shoe, so they could not figure out who to charge. The scriptures teach us to bear each other's burdens, something Paul taught, to bear one another's burdens, to come alongside one another in solidarity, and to even take risk in supporting each other. We're talking about the day-to-day stuff, but also the bigger stuff that can be kind of scary and daunting. When the first Christians got it right, they were showing up for each other. In the day-to-day ordinary things like eating and parenting, meeting basic needs, but also in the scarier stuff, like providing safety for the disciples while the authorities were after them. Some of them opened up their homes kind of as a safe house for folks who were targeted by the authorities. They would go to the prison and show up with food and resources for the folks in prison and pray with them and support them. And they even were willing to get arrested alongside those who are being wrongfully detained. Cowardice is letting our fears lead us and making bad choices when we are afraid. But courage is letting our values and our convictions lead us and making the good and loving choices even when we are terrified. And my hope is that we can follow Jesus' example. And in many ways, Paul's example. He didn't always get it right, but he did often. And that we can lean into more and more courage this week. And being able to acknowledge and be okay with our fears, but say, I'm not going to let my fears hold me back from doing the right and important thing that I need to do out of love and commitment to other people. In the name of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, amen.